Good morning. Well, today is Sunday, November 4th, 2018. Over the next few weeks, Larry and I have plans to focus our teachings on getting understanding. Who doesn't want understanding, right? We all want understanding. And certainly in listening to beloved ones, understanding is desirable and it is sought after. As we travel, people are reading books, they're taking classes, they're going through syllabuses. They're trying so hard to get understanding, and it kind of seems endless, but there's that section that says, with all thy getting, get understanding. And it can kind of hit us like a pile driver, like, oh my gosh, I've got to get this understanding. But I think we'll see as this unfolds that it's not quite that erratic or that, our relationship with God is a wonderful thing and to be enjoyed, and it doesn't come at us like a tsunami, but it comes across still waters, it comes across peaceful seas, and we needn't have concern that there's not enough hours in the day to enjoy a great relationship with God and have that understanding. We all, really, books, classes, syllabuses, I'm not downing those at all. They're knowledge, but knowledge is knowledge. It can be accurate, it can be inaccurate, it can lead our minds to shape our thinking in a certain way. And it's only the Word of God that can flesh out whether that information is good and reliable or whether it starts to lead us down rabbit holes. Larry likes to talk about those are rabbit holes. So, knowledge is information. And the Word is truth. Proverbs 4:7, we all have regarded this verse for many years. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding. So for Larry and I, it is our prayer that with this series that we'll work through the next few weeks, God will bring us clearness on this subject of getting understanding, and more especially how to keep it. Because we'll see as the weeks move on, and getting understanding is one thing and keeping it is something else. This morning we'll read through 1 Kings chapter 3 and a few other sections of scripture relating to Solomon's wisdom and understanding. The record of Solomon asking God for an understanding heart melts mine. It's such a beautiful and tender account and so powerful. And keeping in mind that Solomon was the son of David, who in the book of Acts is referenced as a man after God's own heart. And David's prayer, as any prayer of a father for his children, was for his son to be like him, but even better. That was David's prayer. So Solomon's reign was 40 years, and it was 40 years of peace and prosperity. Now, this record is in the Old Testament. Solomon did not have Christ within. The new birth was not yet available at this time. And we will be, in the continuing weeks, handling wisdom and understanding from the church epistles as we move along. So, in keeping with the records of David, his father, the details of Solomon's life are exceptionally inspirational concerning the heart of an individual toward God. And of course, for us, toward our Father, our Heavenly Father. These records, we hope, will serve beautifully to approach the subject of understanding. So in 1 Kings chapter 3, we're going to read most of that. Verse 1 will start, and Solomon made affinity with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he made an end of building his own house and the house of the Lord, and the wall of Jerusalem roundabout. So, very simple, Solomon married Pharaoh's daughter. He took her to be his wife. Only the people sacrificed in high places, because there was no house built unto the name of the Lord until those days. And if you look back in the history line, it says that David provided all the building materials, he provided the plans, but Solomon oversaw the construction. Verse 3, and Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and burnt incense in high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar. So Gibeon was upon a hill, and there's a wide variance from 3 miles to 6.5 miles northwest of Jerusalem, this high place was. And Gibeon means high hill. So he must have had a lot on his mind when he went there, 1,000 sacrifices. And we can relate to that. How many times have we gone to God with a heavy heart, with just so many things just pressuring us in? And we're not the king of people that cannot be numbered. So, you know, we can definitely relate to when we have a lot on our mind. And he did go to God. He went to God just like his dad. In verse 5, in Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, ask what I shall give thee. Now, I do want to say commentaries are inexhaustible about Solomon. They cannot even agree on the year he was born, the year he died, or how old he was when he died, or how far Gibeon is from Jerusalem. I mean, they're just a wide array. And the year of his birth, the year of his death, how old he was, those are all census facts that maybe a novel would have that would make it have a nicer backdrop where you are drawn in by more detail. But there really isn't a whole lot of insight other than what we're going to dig out of the Word. But as Larry has taught, when we go to the Old Testament, we look at it through the filter of God's perfect love. Some say Solomon had every right to go to Gibeon to offer sacrifice to the Lord. And there are others that condemn his actions of going there to offer sacrifice. But whichever the case, God came to Solomon in a vision and asked him what he wanted, most of all. So God doesn't see or judge like us humans. He, you know, that's why it's the true justice of a just God. He sees inside, and what's inside is most important to him. We see somebody do something, and we judge it, why they did it. We all do that. I hate it when I do it, but we all do it. It's just part of life. It's part of that carnal aspect of our being. But our sight brings information from the outside. God's understanding brings divine information to the outside. So God looks upon the heart of a person, and no matter what commentaries say, God obviously found Solomon's heart worth a visit. You know, so when all is said and done, God appeared to Solomon and he asked him, what do you want? Verse 6, and Solomon said, thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on the throne as it is this day. Solomon's answer to God's question was already on his lips. He didn't stand there, let's see. Like when I ask my grandsons, what do you want for Christmas? oh, can I get back with you? You know, you would think it would just be right there. Well, Solomon's response was right there. It was right there, which indicates he had given this some thought. He had been thinking about this. He was ready to talk. He realized, number one, that his father loved God. And he also realized that God loved his father and that he had shown his father great mercy. And he believed that God, the same God that helped his father, could and would help him be the king. And another point I love here, he was so honest before God, very humble. He was a king, for crying out loud. What could he not have done and gotten away with it? Yeah, he was a young dude. He was a young dude. Imagine giving a young person, really, of any time in history, that much responsibility and that kind of a title and that kind of power. How many would remain humble? You know, people, what happens when people win the lottery? Do they act wisely with it? You know, it's just in that sin nature of man to want to be pompous, to want to be seen and known. But although he was a king, Solomon considered himself a servant of God, who had a big task ahead of him. In verse 7, "And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child." Now, what teenager, maybe plus a couple years, would ever admit he's like a little child? I'm grown up now, I'm a man. You know, that's not in our nature. But he didn't have that nature. He had groomed his nature to be toward God, to be Godward. I am but a little child. I don't even know how to go out or come in. I don't know what to do with all these people. There's so many of them. Imagine that. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people. Now, do you think he could walk unseen in a crowd? I mean, you know, there's the king, 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 wait, I've got a question, you know. So pressure was just on him. Just think about it. Read the word and think about what it is saying. It's the same in our day. There's no new thing under the sun, right? What has been will be, and what will be already has been. So I believe Solomon said that. So he was in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people, then it cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. I really love this, because this tells us that Solomon knew who all these people belonged to. Did they belong to the king? No, they did not. He said he was in the midst of thy people. It's God's people. We don't own people in any administration. We don't own people. They're God's people. And we can never lose sight of how precious that is. These people belong to God. Solomon said of himself, "Thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen. A great number, a great people in number." And I think of growing up, I was never really good at catching balls or throwing them very accurately. And when we would do even dodgeball, we would line up in a line and the two captains would choose the people. Nobody ever called my name first or second or third or fourth. I was like one of the last few stragglers to ever be invited to be on somebody's team. So, you know, it's interesting because God shows them. So maybe people didn't choose me, but God chose me. You know, that's the point. Solomon was a very young man, hardly an adult, And here he was, the king in the midst of a large kingdom with life coming at him at warp speed. He didn't have the confidence of judging matters and making right decisions because he wasn't yet skillful. He fully realized he needed God's hand upon his life, and his response to God shows that he had given thought and maybe one reason why he went to offer so many sacrifices. So verse 9, give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge whose people? God's people. Yeah. That I, Solomon, may discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge thy so great a people? In this verse, the Hebrew word for understanding refers to a heart that hears, listens, and responds. Heart is the place within our minds that is established one way or the other according to our thinking, the determination of our will, and it is where our moral character lives. It is the control center for our appetites, emotions, and passions, which every human being has. That's why we need a control center. Some people are out of control. The controls are either on automatic pilot, or the controls jammed, or somebody just totally walked away from the controls. Solomon wanted an understanding heart. Now why? He wanted it to be able to judge this thy so great a people. Think about this. People without number for quantity. Solomon wants to be able to do this mentally and physically. To physically and mentally endure. That's what I mean. Put yourself in his shoes. Walking down the street. Walking up into, walking around in his palace. Just to endure while he listens day after day, hour after hour, to the endless situations requiring the judgments of a king. And then to have his moral compass in place to bring forth an accurate determination. Just like in the case, which we're not going to read about today, but the case with the two women, where one said, it's my child. The other said, no, it's my child. You know, he just walked that thing through, and he observed, and he listened, and he watched, and he looked at their heart, not at what they were saying. He would have been very confused because one lady was as sincere as the other was. You see a lot of situations in life, even today, where one person is saying this and the other person is saying this. They both sound very credible. So imagine how difficult that would be day after day, hour after hour, without an understanding heart to prevail under that kind of pressure, to render a reasoning. That's amazing. So physically and mentally, it was taxing. It wasn't an easy job. So discern in that verse. Discern is another word for understand. Solomon fully realized, even at his young age, that he needed a control center so that he could listen, hear what is really being said. Because sometimes when you listen to what people say, no matter how sincere it is, if you are able to track the conversation all the way through, and what the person says, you will see through the situation. You will see into the situation, and it may not be at all related to what they are actually saying. I hope that's clear. Think about it. If not, send me a note. But there's lots of current examples of that. There's lots of examples in the Word, too, but an understanding heart is able to listen and hear and understand what is really at the heart of the matter. and filter through what is being said so that an accurate decision can be formed. In verse 10, "And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing." Verse 11, "And God said unto him, Because thou hast asked this thing, you didn't ask for the life, a long life, you didn't ask for riches for yourself, and you didn't ask for the life of your enemies, but thou hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee." Wise means capable in judging. It's skillful with regard to affairs, whether they're human or whether they're divine. Brilliant and capable with reason and in the using of it. Wise in administration. Wise with your health. Wise in ethics and divine matters. I think it makes me think of the scripture that we're to be wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. You know, we got to get up before the devil does. And that's an inside job. That's not setting an alarm clock. We couldn't really physically get up before he gets up because he's always around. But, you know, we are to be skillful. We are to learn and add to our understanding and walk with more accuracy. When you read through these sections where they had the building of the temple, all these men who were skilled, that had the wisdom to do all these things, they came and they did it. They brought all these resources to the tabernacle or to the temple so that there was not one thing left wanting. And I don't really know, I'd have to go and look, but I don't recall Solomon sending out a letter saying, "We need this and this and this." People were aware. They came. They offered. You couldn't tell them no. In Genesis 41, Pharaoh spake of Joseph, saying, "There is none so discreet and wise as you are." And Pharaoh set 30-year-old Joseph over all the land of Egypt. He gave Joseph his ring. He put Joseph in king's garments, and Pharaoh further said, "Behold, I am Pharaoh. And without thee, Joseph, no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt," meaning that Joseph would make the decisions, and no man was to move up or down, right or left, without Joseph's leading or his involvement. In Daniel chapter 1 is another one. It is said of Daniel, "In all matters of wisdom and understanding, the king found Daniel 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his reign, that were at his disposal, at his fingertips." So this is what the understanding heart looks like. This is how men and women operated with an understanding heart. In 1 Kings 3:13, look at what God does next. "And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days." As king, God set Solomon in a league all his own. Verse 14 goes on, "And if thou wilt walk in my ways, choose life, choose blessings, to keep my statutes and my commandments as thy father David did walk, then will I lengthen thy days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and offered up burnt offerings and offered peace offerings and made a feast to all his servants. You think he was a happy camper? I'm telling you, he was a grateful man, grateful young man. So now we'll move to verse 4 and we'll start in verse 29. 1 Kings 4:29. And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand is on the seashore. So he was mentally and physically equipped. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt. So Solomon not only had wisdom concerning divine matters, but his wisdom exceeded all of the wisdom of science, math, I mean, you know, amazing. And there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all the kings of the earth, not just the believer countries, but the unbeliever countries, which had heard of his wisdom. And one of those people who came was the Queen of Sheba. And this is, I think this is a funny record. I think it's a cool record, and I think it's an exciting record because just of God's greatness. And verse 1, it's 1 Kings chapter 10, where Queen of Sheba shows up on his doorstep. Verse 1, and when the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to prove him with hard questions. Now, hard questions is actually referring to riddles, puzzles, parables, little trick questions. Well, there's no new thing under the sun, because if you flip ahead a number of years, what happened to Jesus throughout the Gospels? The same darn thing. No, we got him on this. So she came to examine him for his authenticity. She had heard about him. Now, is he the real deal or what? She wants to know. So she was doubting, and she was willing to expose him. She was on a mission. And in verse 2, and she came to Jerusalem with a very large train, with camels that bear spices, very much gold and precious stones. And when she was come to Solomon, she communed with him of all that was in her heart. And of course, her heart was full of little tricky things. Verse 3, and Solomon told her all her questions or words. He told her all her words. There was not anything hid from the king. Was there anything hid from Jesus?
No.
He heard their words. He saw their actions. But how in the world did he know their hearts? Because he had an understanding heart. He was able to see through what they told him. My mother used to always have a saying, and I've heard many people say their mothers have said the same thing. They'll hang themselves with their own words. You know, and that's kind of that, just listen it through. They'll hang themselves with their own words. And when the Queen of Sheba had seen all Solomon's wisdom and the house that he had built, here Sheba starts doing the math. She gets out her little calculator and she says, wow. And it starts tallying up. She saw the meat of his table, the sitting of his servants, the attendance of his ministers and their apparel, and his cupbearers, and Solomon's ascent by which he went up unto the house of the Lord. She was breathless. It says there was no more spirit left in her. She was taken aback. And I also think it has to impart the meaning of all of that stuff she came with, all of that snarly stuff, these little quizzes and parables and all these little trick things. They just fell flat. She had nothing. She had nothing left in her to attack him with. And not only mentally, but I think she surrendered at that point to see that, wow, I think he reached her heart. Because it just makes sense. It's logical, according to the word. So she was left breathless, verse 6, and she said to the king, "It was a true report that I heard in mine own land of thy acts and of thy wisdom. Howbeit, I believed not the words until I came and mine eyes had seen it. And behold, the half was not told me. Thy wisdom and prosperity exceeds the fame which I heard. Happy are thy men, happy are these thy servants, and happy is, of course, blessed, which stand continually before thee and hear thy wisdom." And it's the same for us. We're happiest, we're most blessed, when we're standing to serve God. Can't make it any plainer. Verse 9, "Blessed be the Lord thy God, which delighteth in thee, to set thee on the throne of Israel, because the Lord loved Israel forever. Therefore made he thee king to do judgment and justice." So we kind of see what Solomon desired most of all was actually what God had on his mind most of all. And it sort of lines up that God will give you the desires of your heart. Did Solomon get the desires of his heart? He did. So in closing, I want to take some time to look at a few verses from Psalms and Proverbs on wisdom understanding. Great keys for getting it, great keys for keeping it. So I'll just read these to you. Psalm 111, verse 10. "The fear of the Lord," and remember, loving God, "to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself," that's the fear of the Lord. Love. "It's the beginning." That's the beginning of wisdom. That's not the goal. That's the beginning. I think our very first weekend that we ever did in this chapel is back there on that sign in the back of the room. That love is the beginning of all Christian endeavor. It's the springboard. It's the starting point. It's not our goal to love. Our goal is being outfitted with God's love. We rush into the fray to do God's will. So the fear of the Lord, the love of God, loving him, it's active. It's thoughtful. It's thinking things through. It's seeing without being told. It's doing without being asked. Is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do his commandments. His praise endureth forever. In Psalm 119, 130, it says, "The entrance of thy words giveth light. It giveth understanding unto the simple." You know, we can turn on that light. His word is there 24/7, 365. It's there for us just opening up. This is God's heart. This is who God is. If you want to know, if you want to have his heart come at you off the pages, you may not find it in a book or a syllabus or another class. I'm not saying those won't help you, but let's not forget the first principle. This is the first fruit of truth. This is God's voice. This is God's heart. This is God's will. And these words are holy. They're spirit. They're life. And they work within your mind to bring you spiritual understanding. And it says in Proverbs 2:12, "Understanding shall keep thee." Do we always pray for safety and for God to keep us and protect us? Of course, and we're not going to stop doing that. Right. But what is inside of us is going to keep us. It's going to keep us. Proverbs 3:5, trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. Because sometimes our own understanding, it sees with these. It sees with the eyes. And it misses the heart of the matter. Proverbs 4:5, get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not. Neither decline, which just means don't turn to the right or turn to the left. Don't decline. Stay focused. Don't turn aside from the words of my mouth. Forget it not is an interesting word. It means to ignore. It means to wither. And it means to simply cease to care. To become oblivious because of lack of attention. To become oblivious to God because we just, you know, it's a closed book. Now, we don't live like this. You know, we have to go to work. We have to get in our car. We have to clean our houses. We have to take care of our children. We have to cook meals. We have to do a lot of things. But cannot God be on our mind? We have wonderful songs. I don't know, probably... Oh, David's time, of course, had lots of music. But in our day and time, we have music. We have the Bible on record. We have things to put in our ears and listen to God all day long, not to mention just being still and knowing that He is God, taking time to pray. So it's not this feverish sprint that we have to be engaged in. So we don't want to get sidetracked in our own understanding, and we certainly don't want to forget God's word because we don't take the time to keep it fresh. Because if there's lack of attention to it, then we will cease to care. That saying that... what is that saying about if someone's away from you, it makes the heart grow fonder?
Absence makes
the heart grow fonder.
Absolutely.
Not true.
No.
It may make you realize what you didn't have or what you aren't enjoying. You know, I'm not saying absence doesn't do something, but but absence of the word does not make our hearts grow fonder. There you go. Larry just added, out of sight, out of mind. For if you didn't hear that. So Proverbs 4:7, we'll close with this wonderful verse. Wisdom is the principal thing. And that word principal, it's the first. It's the beginning. It's chief. And it literally means first fruit. Wisdom is the first fruit. Therefore, get it. Get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding, which will kind of be our ongoing theme. We'll pick that up. Such joyful records to read, and hopefully this sets an expectant tone for the continuation of our series. There is a lot to consider. There is a lot to munch on this week. Next week, we will continue on this topic of getting understanding. So bless you. Have a great week.